morning and welcome to a special edition of Midday here on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten, and today we're broadcasting live from the Rotunda of the Minnesota State Capitol in St. Paul. Minnesota legislative session officially begins at noon today, less than an hour from now. And today on Midday, we're going to be talking with a host of key legislators about some of the major issues that are expected to dominate debate during this legislative session. Glad you could tune in. Hope you'll be able to stay tuned and stay right with us right on through 1 o'clock this afternoon. Should be an interesting discussion. Mike Mulcahy, Minnesota Public Radio's political editor, will be with us throughout the program to lend his expertise. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Gary.
A relatively short session, I understand.
Well, it's supposed to be, but there are an awful lot of things on the agenda this year, in large part because of that big surplus, $1.6 billion projected by the end of the biennium, the 15th surplus in a row for the state budget. And $500 million of that is already in the bank, so to speak. It's left over from the last fiscal year. Governor Ventura has already recommended sending that $500 million back in the form of another sales tax rebate. And it seems as if, we can ask some of our guests as the program goes on, it seems as if there's some amount of agreement on that amount, a $500 million rebate, but exactly how it would be structured would still have to be worked out. And then there's the big question of what to do with the rest of that surplus. And typically in a short session like this, Gary, the main issue would be what's called the bonding bill. That's mm-hmm. the bill that sets out how much in bonds the state will sell to finance big construction projects. The governor has said he wants to limit that to $462 million. There are already requests in for about $1.5 billion, so that's going to stretch things out a little bit. Then there's what the governor calls his big priority for the session, this constitutional amendment that would change the legislature from a two-body legislature to a one-house, a unicameral legislature. That will no doubt get a lot of debate. And from there, we just keep going. Transportation is another big issue. The House Republicans have already said they want to spend $400 million to do some road projects around the state. And they say they're not crazy about the LRT plan for Minneapolis and into Bloomington that passed last year, and they might try to repeal that. Those are, I think, some of the biggest issues on the docket, and they certainly are some big issues. Then there's sort of a second tier out there, things like education, farm aid, issues with the DNR, the wolf hunting program, the abortion issues, affordable housing issues, and crime. All of those on the agenda for this session. So it's supposed to be a short one, but I guess we'll see what happens.
Now, this is also an election year, and you've been up here for many, many years. As you know, that tends to play a role in how things play out here at the Capitol.
It's not only an election year, it's a very important election year, because every legislative seat is up for election, and the legislature next year will do that process of redistricting. So whoever controls the legislature next year will have a big say in how those boundaries are drawn on the districts, and that's a big prize. It only comes around every 10 years, so that this year's election is even more important than the typical election.
Minnesota Public Radio's political editor Mike Mulcahy, who will be here for the full 2 hours of our midday broadcast today, live from the state capitol. We're going to be talking about all the issues that Mike mentioned, many, many more as well. We'll be talking with key legislative leaders, check in with some of the folks up here at the capitol who will be trying to influence legislation. Lots of ground to cover today, so let's get started. Joining us now, one of the most influential legislators here at the Capitol, the longtime chair of the Senate Tax Committee, former gubernatorial candidate, Senator Doug Johnson, a DFLer from Cook. Morning, Senator.
Good morning. It's good to be here. I have moved to Tower, though, from Cook.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should know that.
I still love Cook, though.
The tax rebate, this $500 million tax rebate, is that a certainty?
The sales tax rebate is a certainty. We agree with Governor Ventura. There should be a rebate of about a half a billion dollars. I think the one difference that we have at this point with the governor is we would like to do some retroactive rebate provisions. There were too many people left out of the 1999 rebate, senior citizens because of Social Security income, students who didn't qualify. Other seniors who forgot to fill out their 1997 property tax rebate. So in the bill that we're going to hear in the Senate Tax Committee Thursday and hope to pass it out, we're going to have a 2,000-year rebate as well as a retroactive rebate for a lot of Minnesotans who didn't get a 99 rebate.
Now, are you thinking, Senator, that the check should go out fairly quickly, or do you want to wait, as the governor has always suggested, till the end of the into the fiscal year?
Well, if I had my way, we would send it out as quickly as possible. We have to work through that with the governor and with the House Republicans who control the House and work that through. But I don't think it should be held hostage for other legislation before us this year. I think we should make a quick decision, the three parties, and agree on a time to send it out and the amount and do it. But I think the retroactive future to me is very important.
What about the House Republican plan to cut income taxes again across the board? Each bracket would be reduced. The middle bracket, I guess, would get a little more of a reduction, one-half, three-quarters, and a half. Do Senate DFLers support that idea?
Well, I think the House Republicans are doing an excellent job of trying to work themselves back in the minority. First of all, they've developed a tax and spending plan that costs a lot more than is available in the bank. If the governor and the Senate Democrats went along with it, in fact, we would be having deficits in the future. They did this the same in 1999, and the governor and the Senate brought them to their senses, and the Department of Finance said, you've got to make some adjustments. And so they've come out of the gate with something you can't even do. It's like spending a huge sum of money and then not being able to pay your credit card payments when they do. And the other part of their plan, I guess I'd like to compare Senate Republicans and House Republicans. We find the Senate Republicans much more responsible than the House Republicans. Senate Republicans this morning, in fact, have proposed an increase in the personal exemption. We find that much fairer than the House Republican plan. The House Republican plan that gives about 40% of the tax cut to 5% of the wealthiest people in Minnesota. And so we'd like to have it more balanced, get the money of the middle and low-income people. It looks like the Senate Republicans are more on the page with the Senate Democrats on that plan.
Senator, the Senate Republicans also said this morning that they expect as much as another $1 billion on top of the $1.6 billion when the next revenue forecast is released in a couple weeks here. Do you suspect that the amount of that surplus will rise, and then won't there be more pressure to cut tax rates if that happens?
Well, I hope they're right. I have not had any indications yet from the Department of Finance or anyone in the administration that there is more money. But certainly, if there is, in the February forecast, the tax cuts will be even larger. We're going to have a balanced tax cut plan in the Senate. It'll combine an income tax cut, a property tax cut, and then an issue that we tried to do in the Senate last year is cut the auto registration fees. We think that's very important in our state, as well as meet some needs. We want to help our schools. There's some health care initiatives we want to do, as well as transportation.
Where would you see the license tab fee going? The governor has proposed a cap of $75. Does that sound about right to you?
There won't be a $75 cap in the Senate bill. We want all those who buy cars and pickups to get some kind of reduction. For sure, there will be about $100 million annual reduction in the amount that that drivers pay for their car and pickup license fees. Unfortunately, last year, the governor dropped the ball on that. The House Republicans never had a cut at all in the license fees, and the final compromise at the end, the Senate position did not prevail on that. But we'll be coming to the conference committee with a cut in the auto registration fee.
Senator, do you think Minnesotans are overtaxed, or has all this money been accumulating largely because the economy has been so good?
The economy's been so good, but certainly we're making a lot of progress in reducing Minnesotans' taxes as well. There's been some more, good policy in the property tax area that's helping to hold homeowners and farmers' property taxes down. But certainly, if we can cut taxes further, and also balance some of the other needs of Minnesotans, better schools. Our senior citizens need a prescription drug plan, and we need transportation improvements, both mass transit and highways. We can have a good, significant tax cut, as well as meet some of the unmet needs.
Senator, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. State Senator Doug Johnson from Tower, Minnesota, incorrectly identifying him from being from Cook, although he was from Cook for a long time.
That's right.
Sold dogs, it takes us a while to teach us new tricks. He's the chair of the Senate Tax Committee. We are broadcasting live, if you're just tuning in, broadcasting live from the state capitol today, the rotunda of the capitol, the Minnesota legislative session getting underway, in about 45 minutes or so. And we thought it'd be interesting today to talk with some of the key players up here at the Capitol, take a look at some of the issues that legislators will be working on this session, try to get some idea of just how those issues will in fact be decided. And joining us now, certainly a key player in the whole process, the Speaker of the Minnesota House, Steve Sligum. Morning, Mr. Speaker.
Good morning, Gary.
Glad you could join us.
Thank you very much. We're only about half an hour away from wrapping the gavel.
I suppose you're just nervous as a cat.
Well, yeah, you know, kind of nervous. A little anticipation of the session coming up. It's almost like the starting that baseball season all over again. You know, that first pitch, you start out, you got great enthusiasm, great hope, and at this point, you think you're going to run the season undefeated.
The tax rebate, that's a done deal.
Well, I won't say it's a done deal. I think there will be a tax rebate. I think caucuses, Republicans in the House, Democrats in the Senate, the governor have agreed that there will be a rebate, that we will do a sales tax type of rebate as of last year. You know, it now looks like the IRS is not, you know, going to tax those money. So I don't think we'll step through those hurdles again, and we'll just agree to get the most money back to the most people we can.
Is there anything else of major significance that everybody agrees on, that it's just a matter of dotting the I's, crossing the T's?
That everybody agrees on. I don't think I could really say that. You know, there's some things that the House seems to agree with the Senate on, some things the Senate seems to agree with the House upon, and the same true with the Senate and the governor. You know, a transportation package, I think, will come forward. That may be the one point of agreement, that we're going to invest some money into an infrastructure of roads and bridges, some type of a balanced approach between outstate Minnesota corridors, highway corridors, and addressing those bottlenecks that exist within the metropolitan area.
Mr. Speaker, Mike Mulcahy here. We just heard Senator Johnson say that the House plan won't work. You're spending too much, and you're cutting taxes too deeply, and if the state adopted your plan, they'd be back into deficits.
Well, Senator Johnson is not correct. He's simply not correct from the standpoint of the numbers. And I just noticed a little tone in Senator Johnson's voice. It seemed to me a little more confrontational, partisan, you know, the good old Democrat versus Republican. We're trying to bring forward a different tone from the House, and that'd be one of cooperation and balance. I think that's what the people of the state of Minnesota want us to do. And I understand, you know, the senator needing and wanting to portray his position as being the only correct one. I think we understand in life there's good ideas on both sides, and you end up cooperating and balancing. And in our bill, Mike, honestly, our proposals are balanced in relationship to the permanent tax cuts, which would be forthcoming. We want to have that lunch bucket tax cut, reduce permanently the taxes on moms and dads.
How do you think you're going to work with the governor this year? There was some bad feelings at the end of the last session when he used his line item veto authority to take out, I think it was $160 million worth of spending. And I know you've already talked about the light rail transit project, maybe trying to repeal money for that. What's going to happen there?
I think indicative of how we're going to work with the governor is today. On the House floor, as members of my caucus, as well as a number of Democrats, have pushed us to try to override the gubernatorial vetoes the end of last May. To start out that way, the session with confrontation, start out by kind of in your face, Governor, we're going to override your vetoes. You were wrong in doing it, and by the way, I think he was wrong. But that's not the right tone you want to set to the start of the legislative session, Mike. And even though we've been pushed by some members of the caucus and a lot of Democrats, in fact, I've received the word that maybe there might even be a Democratic motion on the House floor to, you know, to try to override the veto. That will not happen today. I think we want to set a tone of cooperation and working with the governor, not in your face.
How do you see the unicameral issue playing out, Mr. Speaker? I know you're in favor of the idea of moving to a one-house legislature, or at least letting people vote on it. The governor certainly is. He's made it its top priority. Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe adamantly opposed to it. How do you see that getting resolved?
Well, I think it will certainly pass the House, Gary, very quickly and very easily. The test will be in committee. I think the vote in the committee, the Governmental Operations Committee, is much closer than on the House floor. When it gets to the House floor, it'll probably pass with 85 to 90 votes. In the Minnesota Senate, of course, the vote is much closer, and Majority Leader Roger Moe does not like the idea. for whatever reason, doesn't like the idea that maybe even the citizens should have the right to vote upon it, have the right to voice their opinion. I think that it'll be one of those situations where the governor will have to step in and work with the senator, convince them of the right of the citizens to vote on it, maybe compromise, cooperate with some other issues. You know how things get balanced and traded off.
Do you think legislators should vote for unicameral if they're opposed to unicameral, just on the idea that, well, let the people decide?
I think that's, Gary, that's a good fallback position. If you need a fallback position and you're not convinced that the unicameral is the right thing to do, I think the fallback position is at least the citizens should have the right to vote, and that I'm, as a politician, I'm not going to stand in the way of them reforming their government. I would argue, though, that there are good policy reasons for the single house legislature, the accountability it would bring, the openness to the process.
Abortion-related provisions. Now, they seem to come up every year, and last year you got to the end of the session and there was a deadlock. There were some provisions included in the Human Services Bill. Finally, they were removed at the last instant. You kind of agreed with that, took a lot of heat for that. Are they coming back again this session?
Yeah. Ironically, I took a lot of heat from persons who term themselves pro-life. That's where the heat came from. In fact, the House had passed the provisions. The Senate wouldn't agree, and took heat from more of those who supported the issue. Ironically, in politics, that works that way sometime. This year, I think, Gary, very honestly, the bills will come forward, centered around the one moderate piece of legislation called the Women's Right to Know, a kind of a bill that provides information, facts, alternatives to abortion. That bill will come forward. I think what we'll try to do is to pass it separately on the House floor, to bring the focus upon the Minnesota Senate on what is a really moderate piece of legislation, to say not to support this. You'd have to be radical left almost not to support this. And by the way, the governor, Gary, as I understand, and I didn't know this last year, but when he had signed a questionnaire while running for office, I think it was the Family Council questionnaire, had said that he would support this moderate piece of legislation, the facts and information and the women's right to know. So maybe that can come to play in relationship to people standing for the positions they said they would support.
Why not go farther? Why not take up the so-called partial birth abortion ban? Why not do some of that? I mean, the Republican platform is certainly against abortion, and I realize you kind of want to run this middle of the road thing into the campaign, but if we're going to vote for Republicans, why not have the Republicans pass something they stand for?
Well, maybe I could mention two things, Mike, in regards to that. Could you use the word balanced rather than middle of the road?
Okay.
When you stand in the middle of the road, you get run over by people coming both ways, right?
That's what they say.
Yeah, so I'm trying to portray that we're balanced in an agenda and bring forth that perception of balance, which I think, honestly, you would have to say was our agenda last year. It was pretty mainstream Minnesota, tax cuts for families, improving education, reducing class size. The other thing is I think we should focus on the doable. Focus on the one bill, and in this case, the Women's Right to Know, focus on a one bill that you should be able to get passed through the Senate, that the governor has stated, at least at one time, that he would sign. It seems to be doable, as opposed to, maybe pushing too many issues, which, you might do for a political reason one way or another, but are probably not going to make them through the final product, the final end result.
Now, in terms of working with the governor, there's been some talk that you folks may decide to recess at the end of the session and go home for 3-4 days, see what the governor does with the legislation that gets passed, on the premise that last year you got blindsided when he vetoed a number of construction projects. Are you going to do that?
Very possibly. We have talked about it, Gary. I think it's a strategy that both together as House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, we may play out. Let's hold off just a little bit and say let's wait and see what the attitude and the feeling is when we close session, on April 15th or whenever, the middle of April, when that last day is. If there's a strong feeling of harmony, of cooperation, of handshakes, maybe that doesn't need to be done. But last year, you're correct. The word I used was blindsided. We were somewhat blindsided, and I think you learn from that and you say, well, maybe this year we should pass the bills, recess, and come back 3 days later just to make sure that the work was done and signed the way, you know, we thought it should be.
How do you see it playing out? A lot of sweetness and light, a lot of backs slapping and handshakes at the end of the session, or is this, yeah, it is an election year
and
people like to score their points and get themselves on the record?
It is an election year. That certainly brings a different tone sometimes to the legislative session. The hope is that we move Minnesota together, working together. That's the message from the citizens, without question, Gary. You know, the citizens of the state have said, you know, we want the most balanced government this country has ever had. We want not necessarily to have the old rhetoric of Republican versus Democrat, Democrat versus Republican, you know, the old political rhetoric. We want to work together, and that's certainly the olive branches that we're trying to reach out. That's not to mean that I'm going to lay down and just say we don't stand for anything. There aren't any differences. We're going to fight hard for tax cuts for families. You know, we're going to fight hard for a rural economic development bill. We're going to fight hard for a transportation bill. Those things will be on our agenda, and I just think that there will be a governor and a Senate that also wants those things on our agenda.
Mr. Speaker, thanks for coming by today.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here. Right here in the halls. Come on upstairs in about 20 minutes, and we'll hear the gavel rap.
We will if our cords are long enough. We'll see. Thanks a lot for coming by.
Mike, Gary, thank you.
Thank you. Minnesota House Speaker Steve Swigum joining us here at our broadcast table, the rotunda of the state capitol. Mike Mulcahy here at the table as well. And we're, the legislative session getting underway now in about a half an hour. And we're talking today here on midday with some of the key figures who are going to be making the decisions on the issues of concern to Minnesotans, taking a look at some of the issues as well. And lots more coming up. We'll be talking with John Woodley a little later on, Governor Ventura's spokesman, and House Minority Leader Tom Pugh will be joining us. We'll be talking with the chair of the bonding committee, trying to decide how much the state should borrow. So lots coming up over the next hour and a half, and we hope you'll be able to stay tuned. Right now we have some news headlines coming up in just about a minute.
Programming on NPR is supported by Ecolab, dedicated to improving cleaning and sanitation standards for leading hospitality, healthcare, and food processing customers worldwide. On the web at ecolab.com.
Good morning. It's 11:28, and in the news this morning, investigators may be a step closer to knowing what caused the crash of Alaska Airlines Flight 261. A top Coast Guard official says searchers may be close to locating one of the aircraft's flight recorders. New Hampshire voters are picking their favorite candidate today in the nation's first presidential primary. George W. Bush is predicting victory in the Republican field. Meantime, Democrat Bill Bradley says he's ready for the verdict. The Baseball Players Association has filed a grievance to overturn John Rocker's suspension. The Atlanta Braves reliever has been suspended until May 1st for disparaging remarks he made about foreigners, homosexuals, and minorities. National Reform Party Chairman Jack Gargan has moved the site of an emergency convention to Las Vegas. Gargan originally said the event would be in Chicago. Word of the change came today. The emergency convention is being called March 17th through 19th to settle a number of disputes. Among them, the site of the party's presidential nominating convention in August. Some rural Minnesota lawmakers are predicting dire consequences if the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency implements proposed feedlot rule changes. The rules aim to safeguard the environment by reducing the flow of animal waste into rivers and streams. State Senator Charlie Berg of Chicago says the rules are meant to get at big livestock operations, but will wipe out the smaller ones in the process. Hundreds of farmers are offering their opinions on the proposal at public hearings across the state. Some 50 northern Minnesota resort owners gathered in Cass Lake City Hall yesterday to discuss a DNR proposal to lower the yellow perch limit. Resort owners say a lower limit would gouge their winter business. A steady decline of big perch in Lake Winnipegoshish has prompted the Minnesota DNR to propose lowering the statewide limit from 100 yellow perch to 20 daily. Resort owners agree that a reduced limit is necessary, but they say too great a reduction will ruin their winter business. A 30-day public comment period begins on the issue this month. That's the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom. I'm Marianne Sullivan.
Thank you, Marianne. It's about 30 minutes now before 12 o'clock. This is Midday coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio. Gary Acton here along with Mike Mulcahy, Minnesota Public Radio's political editor. And we are broadcasting live today from the rotunda of the Minnesota State Capitol. And Today, taking a look at some of the big issues facing Minnesota legislators as they get ready to start the session, and talking with some of the key people who will be making the decisions on those big issues. Joining us now, John Woodley, who is Governor Jesse Ventura's spokesman. Hi, John.
Good morning, Gary.
Thanks for coming over.
You're welcome.
Governor back from his vacation, tanned, rested, ready to rock?
You know, I didn't notice the tan. I didn't think it was that great. You know, I was going to ask him about that, why he didn't have a better tan. But the weather maybe wasn't all that, didn't cooperate. But he is rested and ready to go and seems enthusiastic and ready to do battle.
is that the appropriate term, or you know, is it going to be sweetness and light this year?
The reason that I hesitated is that if you read the newspapers and listen to the news reports, you'd think that we're, you know, gearing up for a huge battle over here. It's kind of like the pregame Super Bowl or something, but I don't know. The way I look at it, I think it'll be constructive. Of course, there'll be disagreements, and there'll be times when he said, she said, and that kind of thing. But I don't look for it to be quite as acrimonious as the media is trying to make it look.
What is the governor's bottom line here when we get to the 1st of May? What is it that he wants the legislature to have accomplished? A lot of wish list things, but the one or two things that he really wants accomplished.
The governor is very much into procedure, and he likes to sort of follow the rules and to have a fair system. And he believes that our system is set up so that we have biennial sessions to do budgets, and then we set those budgets, those spending limits, and we then carry them out over a two-year period so that in an off session we don't do supplemental spending. We don't come back and do another budget. We already have a budget. We ought to live by it. So I don't look for the governor to be very cooperative when it comes to supplemental spending. I think he believes that the budget surpluses that are the $1.6 million that we're talking about being forecast is a forecast and is not real yet, and that we ought to not be dealing with that until the budget year next year. I think that he wants to do capital bonding, which is what this session is designed for, and he believes that a reasonable limit to capital bonding would be $400 million. That's where the give and take is going to be between the governor and the legislature this year.
So there is a little wiggle room there. He's not drawing a line in the sand here and told legislators you simply dare not pass the $468 million level.
The governor's position is $462 million. The legislature, the House's position is similar to that, I believe, and I won't speak exactly for the House, and the Senate might be a little bit more. The Senate's maybe a little bit more flexible, but we'll see what happens. And you know, when you read in the newspaper, you'd think that this was a wrestling match. This was one of those matches where they put a cage match or something. But I mean, when you actually listen to the governor and the leaders meet, it's very friendly.
Now, the governor had said that his top priority was going to be unicameral legislature. Is he still?
Yes, on the policy side, that very much will be his agenda. The unicameral legislature, letting the people decide, getting the legislature to pass a law that would put this constitutional question on the ballot for the people to decide in the year, election year 2000. A transportation funding plan that he has proposed that would cut taxes on license tabs and would provide a permanent system by putting the sales tax that you pay on a car into a transit transportation fund, and telecommunications reform and capital bonding.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Mike.
John, this is Mike Mulcahy here. I don't want to be in the cage match, but let's just make sure we're in the same auditorium. What about the Republicans' plan for cutting income tax rates? Would the governor support that?
Well, it's too early to tell. One thing that the governor, you know, reminds us of, his staff, and reminds everyone of, is that his belief that those kinds of adjustments should be made in a budget year. Whether we can accomplish that this year remains to be seen. But his preference would be to take the surplus when it's real, when we're closer to settling up at the end of the biennium and reconciling the books, see what we have to play with, and then cut taxes.
What's his thinking at this point? Are Minnesotans overtaxed, or is most of the money that's projected to come in the result, not of overtaxation, but a good economy?
Well, it's both. I mean, his thinking is, of course, we are overtaxed. That's why he has his Department of Revenue working on a comprehensive property tax reform program. And that is not something that we want to start doing piecemeal. We would rather wait to the 2001 session to look at property tax reform, because then we'll know how much money we have to deal with. It'll be more of a real surplus rather than a projected surplus. And we may have more money than we have now. Who knows? The economy is still great, and we're still collecting taxes at too high a rate. Then we can make those adjustments on property taxes. We can make those adjustments on income tax. He is a patient person. And he would like to go about this in a constructive and safe manner.
Thanks, John. Appreciate you coming by. Oh, quick question.
I just wanted to ask one more question. The Republicans, $400 million for road projects. Is that new spending? Is that out as far as the governor is concerned?
Well, nothing is out until the session is over. It is, obviously, the governor is very interested in a transportation program that will be multimodal and help all of Minnesota. Whether or not we should infuse $400 million of a projected surplus, that would be more difficult. And he's not inclined to do that, not inclined at all. But again, let's not be drawing lines in the sand. Let's not set up a fight until there's time to have a fight. Why fight if you don't have to? We'll see what happens. A lot of people around here with a lot of good ideas.
Thanks, John.
Sure.
John Woodley, spokesman for Governor Jesse Ventura, joining us now here at our broadcast table at the State Capitol. House Minority Leader Tom Pugh, Representative Pugh, the top DFLer in the House. Morning, sir.
Morning. Good to be here.
Sounds like the governor's not too interested in some of the spending programs that have been bandied about as we head into the legislative session.
That's our impression as well. As we approach the session, we are anxious to deal with the $1.6 billion surplus. At the top of the agenda, there will be tax relief. Everybody's talked about tax relief, the governor and both parties, ranging from rebates to reductions in license tabs, consideration of other tax relief as well. But we think that there are problems within this state. As we've traveled around this summer and fall, I learned a lot about a situation in our educational system, for example, that causes me great concern. We have temporary trailer classrooms in existence in a lot of the school districts. Children K through 6 primarily are using 432 of these devices, these temporary classrooms. Teachers and parents talk about outdated textbooks, sharing of textbooks that have information that wasn't current at the end of the last century, certainly not adequate for today. Just recently, an English teacher called me to say that the dictionary in her classroom didn't even contain the word computer. And this is at a time when we're trying to prepare our families and our children to take jobs, very good jobs, in our state that are left unfilled because we don't have a trained workforce. So we're going to try to advance upon the governor the idea that there are some urgent needs within this state. The farm crisis, educational problems, double-digit inflation in tuition for college students, prescription drug prices. We want people to take a look at this. We think we would not be doing our job if we simply said we set a budget last year and it should last for 2 years.
Do you think the legislature will be able to work within that $400-500 million target area that the governor has set in terms of how much the state should borrow for construction projects?
That may be. I've certainly taken the position there's no magic number to a bonding bill, but I think there is a magic balance to a bonding bill. I'm hearing from rural members of my caucus that the governor's proposal largely ignores rural needs. If you look at the spending for the University of Minnesota system, all of the governor's projects are at the Twin City campus. There's no money to UMD, Morris. You look at Minsky system, again, it's primarily Twin Cities located. The balance can be achieved within that number, it's workable. But at its present stage, the governor insists on the programs within his proposal. It would have to expand or grow to garner the number of votes necessary.
People's ears always perk up when they hear tax cuts, and your colleagues, the Republican colleagues over in the House, are talking about an across-the-board permanent income tax cut. we were talking with Senate Tax Chair Doug Johnson a few minutes ago. He didn't seem too enamored with that idea. How about House Democrats?
House Democrats, I believe, would look favorably upon income tax relief, targeted, however, to people earning $120,000 or less. We did an across-the-board income tax cut last year, and I think there'd be people that would be receptive to lowering the tax rates on the lower two brackets. That does, adjusting the lower brackets helps everybody on the first dollars earned. But whether we're in a position to go across the board, because I think it's 40% or more of the tax dollars flows to the very top of that formula. So it gets quite expensive, and I know the governor would have concerns about whether that type cut would be sustainable into the future if our economy slows down.
Representative, I wonder if I could ask you a sort of a practical political question. Times are awfully good now. There's this surplus. People are probably going to get another check in the mail sometime this year. How do the House Democrats separate themselves from this enough and get out there enough to retake the majority in the election this year? It seems like an awfully difficult task.
Well, certainly good economic times usually lead to strong return of incumbents, and that is a factor that's at risk here. We think, however, that there are things at play that differentiate the Democratic Party from the Republicans. The rural economy is not enjoying the same success as people living in the Twin Cities. We find the rural economy in great need, and the Democrats, frankly, have led the way to looking to solve that problem. We've been pushing Congress, for example, to look at the Freedom to Farm Act, to reopen that act, which appears to be, if not the cause of the downturn, it certainly was passed at the start of the downturn. So Democrats have led the way to changing farm policy to help rescue our rural areas. When I talk about education, these needs are still out there. And the Republican caucus has talked about additional spending this year, $400 million, one-time spending, that would be targeted toward roads, congestion, essentially in the western suburbs. So if we look at Wayzata, Minnetonka, out that area, we're saying there are transportation needs that should be balanced, but we need to balance transportation, education, higher ed, tuition relief, and help for our seniors with health care as well. If we're going to spend $400 million, as the Republicans suggest, we believe that a more balanced approach would be appropriate. And we'd hope that would differentiate us in the minds of voters, seniors, people in the rural areas.
So a little spending on this, that, and the other thing rather than one big project.
A balanced approach.
Mm-hmm.
If I might, just on the transportation, the $400 million one-time spending, they said, was targeted to projects in the western suburbs. We like the governor's proposal, which is a long-term solution to the problem. I'm not saying Democrats like every detail of that plan, but it is a leadership position taken by this governor that's unprecedented in my time, that takes us out at least a decade. It balances the need for roads with the need for a transit system, balance the needs of people living within the cities, as well as families out in the rural area.
Very briefly, unicameralism, up or down for the House Democrats?
We're not taking a caucus position on that. We have members that have a wide range of beliefs on that issue. Several years ago, before this became a popular topic, it introduced a bill that I call semi-unicameral that actually has the House acting on all the legislation and has the Senate working on selected items. I'd hope that might get some discussion and play. It resembles some of the things Representative McElroy has talked about as we get into the session. For Democrats, however, we think the priorities are, over unicameral, the educational issues, tax relief, and the variety of problems that we see in a crisis in rural Minnesota, health care issues. They're on our agenda above a change in legislative format.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Tom Pugh, the House Minority Leader, DFL leader in the Minnesota House. We're broadcasting live from the state capitol today. We're just minutes away now from the start of the legislative session, the 2000 legislative session. And usually these are fairly short, tidy little affairs, or at least that's the theory. But a full plate of big issues that legislators are going to have to wrestle with. Now, the one thing that they always deal with in these even-year sessions is the bonding bill, as it's called. How much money should the state borrow to pay for big construction projects? And joining us now is Representative Jim Knobloch, who is the chair of the Capital Investment Committee in the House, Republican from St. Cloud. Morning, sir.
Good morning.
The governor has said that he wants to spend $462 million in bonding projects. Is that about what you folks are aiming at?
On the House Republican side, yes, that's about where we are. We're looking at, the way the governor looks at it, it's $400 million of what he calls general obligation bonds and general fund spending, plus some other miscellaneous spending that isn't necessarily really spending. It's like revenue bonds that pass through and such. But yeah, we're pretty comfortable with the governor's size of the bill. However, we have some disagreements over where he's spending the money within that bill.
What would you like to see more money spent on that he hasn't set aside?
We'd like to see more money in particular spent on higher education and in greater Minnesota. The bill is pretty tilted toward the metro area right now, and that's not necessarily bad depending on where the needs are, but particularly in the higher ed area, both in greater Minnesota and in the metro area, there's very little. There's not $1 for greater Minnesota in higher ed, and it's a pretty stripped down bill in the metro area for higher ed too.
The big item in the governor's bonding bill was $58 million for a new lab for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Is that going to sail through? Do they need that much money?
Well, that's one of our concerns in the House. We do think that the building they're in right now has some problems, and we feel it should be renovated, perhaps expanded some. But we are in the process of building a brand new $10 million lab for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension in Bemidji right now with money that was appropriated last year. And while the lab we have down here in St. Paul certainly could use some updating, I don't know that we need to spend $58 million on a brand new building.
No money for any nonprofits or arts organizations in the governor's bonding proposal. Does that concern you at all?
Well, I've been kind of a proponent of cutting down on the amount of money that's going to local governments in terms of grants, a lot of which is then turned around and put into nonprofits. The bill that we had in 1998, which was the billion-dollar bonding bill, almost half of that money went to local governments in the form of one grant or another. And so the governor, by looking at a $400-some million bill, and ourselves in the House as Republicans, are looking at refocusing the state on its priorities, things like higher education, corrections, and such. We wouldn't perhaps take quite as hard line of view as the governor and not fund anything at all as he has proposed, but we are looking at funding significantly fewer grants to local units of government for nonprofits than we have in the past.
A fair amount of interest in the Guthrie proposal, which I'm not sure they've even actually asked for any money yet, but the idea is that they would ask for $25 million so they could build their new site there on the river. Might that be received favorably, or is that one that's going to raise some eyebrows here at the Capitol?
Well, I think the Guthrie is going to be a hard sell. You know, on the House side, the committee that I chaired toured 117 projects around the state this last summer and fall. We called the Guthrie back last summer saying we knew that they were going to look at a request. We'd like to tour them. And at the time, they said, gee, we're really not ready. We don't have a site. We don't know what we're doing yet. There was a bill that passed last year that said that grants like that to the Guthrie had to have their grant forms in and their applications in by November 1st. And as Governor Ventura says, when you miss the bus, you miss the bus. As far as I know, it was in January. I still don't think they actually have a city or a local unit of government to ask us to act as a sponsor for the theater. And so they've really got a long ways to go.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Have a good session.
Thank you.
Representative Jim Knobloch, who is chair of the Capital Investments Committee in the House, a Republican from St. Cloud. He'll be playing a key role in trying to decide just how much the state will borrow for big construction projects. Privacy looks to be a very, very big issue. And joining us now is Minnesota Attorney General Mike Hatch, who is kind of leading the charge on the privacy front, at least on the DFL side. Morning,
good
sir.
Morning. Good morning.
Seems to be pretty broad general agreement between the DFLers and the Republicans on the need for some kind of privacy legislation. Am I right about that?
I think it's fair to say it's a recognition by both parties that the public's right to privacy is a major concern. How they address it, I think they differ in their approach.
Is there any one area, do both sides agree now, do they, that the state should get out of the business of selling lists to commercial interests? Am I correct about that?
I think that may be a little broad, I think, because don't forget, when you're dealing with the government, you're dealing with the public's right to know as well. So people want to have access to certain information. I'll give you an example. If it'd be ideal to say that no government license list ought to be public, unless the licensee agrees to it. On the other hand, I, as a consumer, I have every right to be able to call up the Department of Commerce and find out if my person is licensed as a real estate agent and if my person has any disciplinary actions against him. So there's certain things that you're going to want to have that's public, and you're going to want to have the public be able to get to it. So in terms of how it's going to be private, in terms of the government records, still remains to be seen.
It is a knotty series of questions, this whole privacy area. Do you see any legislation actually passing this session, or is it more a point of trying to discuss and work out some of the differences?
No, I'm very confident that there'll be a bill. I think in banking, I think bank data ought to be private. There are several states now that have introduced legislation. A couple of them have legislation in effect with regard to basically requiring the data to be confidential unless the customer agrees to allow the bank to sell it to other people. With regard to telephone companies, there's a bill with regard to prohibiting the sale of the telephone numbers you call during the month without the express consent of the customer. Mm-hmm. I think those bills have a good chance of passing.
There were concerns expressed at the State Health Department about some of these provisions. They suggesting that, if they all become law, we're going to have a heck of a time collecting the information we need to protect the public health here in Minnesota.
Right. One proposal is that the patient identifier data not be forwarded to the Department of Health. Very few states that I'm aware of allow the health department not only to get the patient data, but also to get the Social Security number or patient, what's called patient identifier data, such as your encrypted name. And what the bill basically says is that the health department can get the health data, but they can't get your name, they can't get your Social Security number, or some other device that they can track back to who you are. So it shouldn't interfere with their research, I think, and indeed I'm not aware of a lot of research that a lot of reports that have come out anyway with regard to the use of this. But they can have it, just don't have our names. In Wisconsin, the legislature just went through a debate on that very strongly. Opposing and rejecting the proposal that the health department get that type of patient identifier information.
When it comes to things like driver's license information, do you see it coming down as the state would be unable to sell that, or would you just give the person applying for the license more ability to keep it secret if that person chooses?
The person would have the ability to keep it secret. The data would still be available if the person agrees to have that made available for sale.
And that's the way it is now, right? I mean, you can ask that it be...
Today in Minnesota, there's we have an opt-out. If you turn the page, you turn the driver's license application over, you'll see a box that you're supposed to check to say, I don't want it sold, and then you sign it and mail it in. What we believe is necessary in order to comply with federal law is that the box would say it is private and will not be made available unless... you sign it and send it in, authorizing us to do so.
Minnesota Attorney General Mike Hatz joining us here live at the Minnesota State Capitol. This is Midday coming to you from the Capitol, and getting ready now for the start of the 2000 legislative session. We're going to take a short break here, then we'll be back with more live coverage.